Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry, where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.
Providing insight and resources for your spiritual journey. Unity Online Radio. Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from a glorious spring day in Fort Worth, Texas, from Unity Fort Worth. Today I welcome well-respected Unity historian Neil Varley to the show. Neil holds a doctorate in American history from Georgetown University. And he's taught at various institutions as American University, the Catholic University of America, and George Mason University. He's also an editor of such journals, well-respected journals as World Affairs, New Realities, and Unity Magazine, and author of several books, including one on Ernest Holmes, the founder of religious science. He's also written three books about the Unity Movement, one focusing on Myrtle Fillmore entitled Torchbearer to Light the Way, and the book which we'll explore today, The Spiritual Journey of Charles Fillmore, Discovering the Power Within. So it's a joy to welcome Neil Varley to today's show. Welcome, Neil.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
You know, the title, Discovering the Power Within, is key, isn't it? Because this is the great shift, I think, that Charles made away from that the old separatist view of God, you know, as being the being out there, to being this presence within. And certainly the thing that attracted me initially to Unity was that it resonated with my understanding of Eastern philosophy as well. And of course, it became the title of one of the greatest books in the Unity tradition. That's Eric Butterworth's Discover the Power Within.
Right.
But it is a key shift, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I grew up as a Catholic, and the doctrine of the Trinity was very basic in the way I viewed the world. For many years, spent 3 years in the Benedictine Monastery. And so to move from the idea that God is out there, that you pray to God to give you things, that Jesus is the second person of the Blessed Trinity and therefore comes from the Godhead, to shift to the idea that Jesus is really teaching about the divine within, the inner power, the inner light. That's a major shift. It's difficult, I think, for many traditional Christians to move from that view of the Godhead to one in which you look at the divine as being inside you rather than outside you.
Right. And of course, it's a both-and thing, because I think Charles had this idea, a very strong idea of Jesus, didn't he, as the great way shower, you know, and the fact that his electrons were, you know, being spread because of the resurrection throughout the whole universe, and lifted up Jesus as the great exemplar of this teaching, but he also nested the idea of the Christ within. Within that understanding, and so it's not like he threw out the baby with the bathwater. He deepened our understanding of what God could be, perhaps.
Well, I think we have to mention Myrtle here first, because we wouldn't have Charles without having the healing that Myrtle received as a result of connecting with that inner light, that inner power. And so she really, without her, we would not have Charles, because Charles is a businessman. He was not really brought up in any strong Christian tradition. So without Myrtle's example in overcoming tuberculosis through using these principles, using these ideas that she could heal herself by connecting with that inner Christ consciousness, we would not have Charles. And also, I think it's really key with both of them was the wide reading that they did in the literature of the day, particularly of Ralph Waldo Emerson, because Emerson's one of the first to really reject the doctrine of the Trinity and to begin positing, really, a Hindu belief about the divine existing within us and using Jesus as the model for that.
Right. And you mentioned in the book that, you know, that Charles's initial response to some of the spiritual searching that Myrtle was involved with was, you know, that's really not of any interest to me. So it was a huge shift from being, you know, almost a skeptic and more taken with, like you say, business interests to becoming this this great light, you know, that's founded the Unity movement. I was amazed at how well-read Charles was, though. When once he set his mind, I think this is part of his character, wasn't it? Once he set his mind to something, he would really go deep with it. And as you mentioned, he read Emerson. We also read some of the other progenitors.
Well, Warren Feld Evans was big in that time.
Yeah, Warren Feld
Evans wrote a lot of major works. And if you look at Evans' work and look at the Fillmores, it's very much alike. You know, the thing about Charles, he's brilliant. And so he was, and both of them are widely read. They, Emma Curtis Hopkins was big with their, in terms of reading and understanding. Charles also got interested in Madame Blavatsky and the spiritual tradition that she came from. And so he was really a spiritual eclectic, as I see it, picking and choosing from a variety of differing sources to put together with Myrtle the Unity teaching.
Well, I was interested to read that you know, Emma Curtis Hopkins had already mentioned the 12 powers as a system. So he obviously initially got that idea of the 12 powers of man, you know, from her by the sound of it. But it became very important to his theology, didn't it?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question because he doesn't really write a book on the 12 powers till 1930. Now we're almost 40 years down the road before he produces that book. And in the period before that, he would write articles in Unity Magazine about it. But after Christian Healing in 2009, he kind of dropped it and didn't really pick it up again as a serious teaching until maybe 1920 or so. And then in Unity Magazine, he began writing articles on it. I maybe have a differing view. See, what seems to me is that the basic Unity teaching, which involves the divine within, it involves affirmations, it involves spiritual healing, it involves meditation. These are all very basic things that are in the Unity teaching from Charles and Myrtle and Lowell. And so the 12 powers is another way of grokking it, another way of presenting it. The idea that if you manifest the 12 powers, you will emanate the Christ consciousness and you will raise yourself to a very much higher spiritual level. But, you see, here's the thing. After 1930, he doesn't talk about it much more. In the next 15 years, it's something that really interested me. He goes back to the basic Unity teachings in his articles. So, I know a number of people in Unity find the 12 powers to be a real way of tuning in and of understanding the teaching, and that certainly works for many people. It doesn't work for me. I just want to let you know that.
Well, you know, I think the 12 powers can be very wonderful, but my idea around it is there's so many more powers than 12. You know, he has some 12 cool powers, but you know, he himself said that divine ideas are limitless, and so there's a bunch more that we could add to that list of 12 powers.
And expand
the whole system. Also, you know, you mentioned that his words are sometimes ponderous in his written material, especially his books. And I find the 12 Powers book one of the most difficult. You know, I think Talks on Truth and Keep It True Lent are really wonderful writings, but Atom Smashing Power of Mind perhaps as well. But when it comes to the 12 Power book, it's tedious reading. It really is.
Well, you'd have to say that about most of his books, because in one paragraph he can present, you know, four or five differing ideas, and they're not necessarily related. He was not a good writer. He was obviously a much better speaker. But writing was not his gift, and that's part of the reason why I think a lot of his books are not really well read. Well, with Ernest Holmes, he wasn't a great writer, but Science of Mind is still one of the major things that religious science uses in terms of their teaching.
Well, and Ernest Holmes was a very consistent, logical writer, wasn't he?
He
laid out his ideas very cogently and systematically, you know, and you can't say that about Charles Fillmore.
No, you can't. That's true.
Yeah,
but the thing about Charles that's, I think, so unusual is that he was a good organizer. And in modern spiritual movements, unless you can organize, they're not going anywhere. And this is the case of Warren Feld Evans. Evans was brilliant. 13 books, and all very well. I read number of them, and he presents the ideas that are basically in Unity in a very effective way. But he was not an organizer. As soon as he passed from the scene, who knows about Warren Feld Evans? Not many people.
Right.
But he was much better at presenting. And see, if you look at all the ideas in Unity and you compare them with Evans, they're there. It amazed me when I really began seeing that, how closely the teachings were. So they read Evans in depth, both of them, both Charles and Myrtle did. And so, in a sense, Unity is Evans, you could say, in one sense. And yet, Charles was able to organize Silent Unity. He was able to organize Unity Magazine. He was able to organize a Unity Center in Kansas City. He was a businessman. And for spiritual movements to succeed, you have to have that talent. And he had
it. Also, the other ingredient, I think, that was present, and I agree with you on the businessman side of things, I think both Charles and Myrtle received healing, didn't they? The direct, visceral healing through practicing the principles.
Absolutely. That's a really good point. That's an absolutely essential point.
Very potent for them, but extreme motivation, I think, towards growing an organization, you know, to teach others and impart the same power of healing. And it continues today. It's ironic to me that, some people have a problem with the oneness blessing, you know, which is something from India, where people lay hands on other people and you receive a blessing. And so much of early Charles Fillmore teaching, and early New Thought teaching was based on the same thing, you know, the laying on of hands, this touching being, you know, a palpable way of receiving healing. And so, you know, we've forgotten that, you know, we're up in arms that there's this movement that, you know, laying on of hands, we should We shouldn't be having anybody else. Everything, it's all done within us. And so we have that ongoing battle, I think, between this idea that it's a completely inside job, and yet there's also this idea that another can be there as a help, a guide in and as receiving healing. It is a bit of a conundrum, isn't it?
Well, I guess you could say that, but if you look at silent unity, which is basically the way unity healing works, it's all on the idea of absent healing, that you can heal at a distance. And so much of the unity teaching and impact lies in the fact that there's the belief that you can heal people by tuning in, even though they may be in Germany, or they may be in Scotland, or they may be in South America, and you can manifest healing in an absent healing, and that was in Emma Curtis Hopkins too. And so that idea is so important in unity.
But again, they kind of nest together, don't they? This idea that it can be both absent healing and, you know,
well, and personal healing that takes place in person.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. It's one thing that always surprised me is that, not surprised me, but see, Myrtle did, and both of them did, practitioner work in the early years. By that, for example, in Ernest Holmes and in Science of Mind, practitioner work is very important, with the practitioner working directly with the person that they are healing. Well, Charles and Myrtle, in the building on 9th and Tracy, had places where you could go and do spiritual healing.
Exactly.
And that disappeared from unity as they proceeded to emphasize silent unity and the silent unity prayer work. So you don't see within unity the kind of practitioner work that developed in religious science.
Right. Interesting shift, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I think it's because, you see, silent unity was so big in terms of the development of unity. And, by 1929, you have, something like, 400 people doing silent unity work. It's huge. And, that all developed as a result of Lowell Fillmore, too, on the Prosperity Bank Plan that enabled that to move forward. Have you seen my book on Lowell?
No, I haven't, actually. I haven't read that one.
Oh, I've got to send that to you because this is, without Lowell, we don't have the movement that we have today.
Mm.
And the Prosperity Bank Plan, that was huge in terms of the development of unity early on. This is a digression, I know, because we're talking about Charles. So go ahead, we'll go back to Charles.
No, that's fine, because I think these are interesting things that we don't often understand. We get taught that Rickert was the one that, built the physical fabric of Unity Village, etc. And we know Lowell from a few poems, maybe, but I think he had a much more important influence, like as you're saying, on the movement as a whole.
And, well, with the Prosperity Bank Plan, that was basically generated the subscriptions to Unity Magazine and Daily Word, and they were sending out 200,000 Prosperity Banks every year in the 1920s.
So, yeah, that's
massive. It was huge. I've got to send you the book on Lowell, because he isn't really recognized as such a key figure in the movement.
Right, yeah. And I think this is the interesting thing about studying the unity movement. It's interesting about studying any movement, depending on where your emphasis is, you see different things in the history. And we need people like yourself, who come in and do a systematic study of things.
Did you mention my Unity Movement book? You were mentioning the one on Charles and the one on...
Yeah, you've written one on the Unity Movement, one on Charles, and...
But the Unity Movement was a major thing because After I finished the book on Myrtle, Connie Fillmore called me in and said, we need to have a book on the Unity Movement itself. And that book took 4 years to write. It was a big job because I had to go through the archives and go through the development movement itself as well as the teaching. And it was one of the things that I really enjoyed working on because I had a committee of Phil White and Vern Barnett and a couple of people outside of Unity as well as Connie herself. And it was one of the most enjoyable work experiences I had within Unity was writing that book.
Very good. All right, we're at the break. I'm with Neil Varley. We're talking about his wonderful work in systematically analyzing the history of Unity and giving us wonderful books of reference, which are invaluable. When we come back, we'll talk more about the book, The Spiritual Journey of Charles Fillmore, and the importance of Jesus to Charles. So join us in a couple of minutes after these messages from Unity.
Unity Online Radio brings you inspiring programs on a variety of spiritual topics. Giving to the network is now easier than ever. Simply text Unity Radio to 72727 from your smartphone. You can make a one-time or recurring donation. Your gifts help us offer enriching spiritual programs that reach listeners around the world. Text Unity Radio to 72727. Thank you for your support.
Weather forecasters can provide guesstimates based on scientific data, but in the end, we cannot know with absolute certainty what the weather will be until we live it. Life works the same way. We may think we know what's going to happen, expecting the best while preparing for the worst. We can keep a positive frame of mind and weather any storm because we are one with the ever-present miracle-working power of God. We are mightier than any circumstance on this earth because we are divine in nature and a part of the eternal. We live in a world where we can realize our possibilities because we know that with God all things are possible. And the way to keep our hearts and minds centered and focused on divine potentialities is through prayer. As author Frances W. Foulkes wrote in her book, Effectual Prayer, if the time of achievement seems long, pray. If the way seems dark, pray. If the results seem delayed, pray. Morning, noon, and night, pray. Pray without ceasing.
This mindful moment is brought to you by Daily Word Magazine. For more than 90 years, Daily Word has helped people of all faiths live healthy, prosperous, and meaningful lives. Take advantage of our 30-day free trial of the digital edition. You'll receive access to the online magazine, a daily email with the word for the day, and the Daily Word app. To sign up for the 30-day free trial, visit unityonlineradio.org/dailyword.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find.
You've
been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm with the wonderful Neil Varley. We're talking about one of his books on the Fillmores. It's entitled The Spiritual Journey of Charles Fillmore. He's written two other books on Myrtle, a book on Lowell, a book on the Unity Movement itself, and books on Eric Butterworth, among other things. So obviously one of the great Unity historians that is so important to codify the message here without dogmatizing it, of course, because we don't have dogma in Unity. One thing we don't have in Unity today is some kind of consistent understanding of who Jesus is or was and his presence in the Unity movement. I know a few years ago there was a move away from even praying in the name and nature of Jesus Christ, you know, because that was limiting for some reason. And I think that would have been a shock horror to Charles Fillmore, right? Because, you know, he put Jesus as very central in his understanding and talked about the Jesus Christ standard. And although he understood very well the Christ within and what that meant, he was also a champion of Jesus the man too, right? And we've sort of brush that aside a little bit in our modern Unity thinking.
Well, see here. How should I say this? We are the Unity School of Christianity, and that was established in 1914. And Charles saw us as a differing way of viewing Jesus, a way in which Jesus is seen as a healer, a way-shower, a teacher, a highly conscious being, but not the Savior. And so it's a move away from traditional Christianity. And it's basically Gnostic Christianity, because the Gnostics held this view of Jesus. And, of course, they were at the Council of Nicaea in 303, Constantine came down on the side of the Trinitarians. He was decided to make a decision who Jesus, what the true teaching was about Jesus, and he sided with the Trinitarians, and of course he then destroyed all the Gnostic communities, all the Gnostic monasteries, and so we don't have any real understanding until the Gnostic Gospels come forth with Lane Pagels in about the 70s or 80s, and finally we see a treatment of Jesus that is in line with what the Unity teaching is today. And the Gospel of Thomas is basically a Gnostic teaching that's Unity. So the go ahead, if you, because I have some more things to say here. But
I agree with you. It's a more mystical understanding of who Jesus was. You know, I would hesitate to call it Gnostic because that comes with a lot of baggage amongst people who, you know, interpret Gnosticism as you know, that there's an evil spirit that creates the world, a sort of demiurge that, I mean, it wasn't God, and I don't think Charles subscribed to some of those aspects.
It's a form of Gnosticism. It isn't
a form of Gnosticism, yeah, which is a broad category of understanding. But yeah, I agree. Right. I think the Gospel of Thomas, you know, which is a sayings gospel, basically, is very much in line with the teachings of Charles, and also the comfortability with paradox, you know, that that God is both immanent and transcendent, that God is both enshrined in Jesus, but also in us, you know, and that we are called to rise to what Fillmore called the Jesus Christ standard. And of course, Charles was a mystic, wasn't he? And so his understanding of these teachings is clear if you are in tune with a mystical understanding. But if you were more literal minded or you're rational minded, you might have some difficulty grasping some of his more subtle and what we might say advanced teachings, which I think in some ways we haven't even embraced to this day. I think there's lots more of Charles Fillmore to mine, isn't there, that we haven't really mined yet?
Well, we have to get back to the whole idea of bodily regeneration, which was, you know, so key in his spiritual approach, because he had a leg was one leg was about a foot shorter than the other, and he believed that through spiritual practice, through meditation and through affirmations, that he could affect the cells of his body, and that he could, he posited this idea of bodily regeneration, which meant that you could live, that the body would never die. Now, that teaching has not really been put forward in Unity for many years, but he did practice it, and he did practice it in terms of his own leg. And by the time, and he, you know, spent many hours in meditation and working on developing the leg, and by the time that he died, there are testimonies that that leg was maybe only an inch or so shorter than the other one. It actually did grow. And so that was one of his challenges and one of the things that he spent a lot of time doing. He also believed in reincarnation, and that if it didn't, and it's a teaching that many people in Unity ascribe to, that if we don't reach levels of higher consciousness in this lifetime, there will be future opportunities. And he also saw himself as the reincarnation of St. Paul.
That's always used to amuse me when I read that, yeah.
You know, so he believed in past lives.
And I understand from your book that he also saw himself as a reincarnation of Napoleon as well.
That was a little... but, so...
It's tongue-in-cheek, was it?
I don't know. It seemed that was a little bit far-fetched.
He was a little man with big ideas, so I'm just like Napoleon.
He was, and I have a great admiration for Charles Fillmore in terms of how he brought this movement forward, and how from, given his background growing up in Minnesota, uneducated, comes to Texas as a small businessman, or, you know, a clerk, and then ends up in the mines of, in the copper mines of Colorado, and, you know, somehow sees, it's interesting how he connected with Myrtle and just kind of knew that she was the one for him. So, you know, my sense is there is some past lives things going on here in the two of them that they understood so early on that they had important work to do, but it doesn't really come out until they get to Kansas City and Myrtle begins to heal herself from tuberculosis.
Right.
So you wouldn't think from Charles's background until he's 35 years old that he would become this, you know, highly unusual, evolved spiritual teacher, healer, organizer, business, and organizer and creator of a major spiritual movement. You would not think that.
Yeah, exactly. Unlikely, isn't it? And yet a complete shift. And some of his entrepreneurial skills were used in radio, you know, because he was one of the early... radio evangelist, wasn't he?
Exactly.
You know, he was very innovative in that way. And like you just referenced earlier, you know, the Silent Unity and the various tracts and publishings that they put out in the 20s were massive. You know, they were going back gangbusters at that time. And of course, the Depression, I guess, forced them, you know, to withdraw a little bit, but then it took off again after the Depression. So yeah, this was definitely something he put his whole heart into. Coming back to bodily regeneration and living in your body, you know, becoming a body of light, as he called it. You know, we don't teach that very much. You're right. In Unity, I came across it in seminary, but we considered it to sort of be an aberrative way of part of the Unity teachings, you know, because it smacks of dualism, because you know, if we are spirit, then it's not a question of regenerating something outside of us. Spirit is about just being relaxed in you know, within the body mind system that we are. So
it's somewhat of a contradiction.
To want to become something else is not, you know, not the way I interpret it. And I'm sure
See, Myrtle's a good example here, because she believed in bodily regeneration. However, as she approached age 86, she began seeing that it was not going to happen for her.
Right.
And what she began to see is that she was going to pass on to the other side. And she began telling people 2 or 3 weeks before she died that she was moving to the other side, because there was more work that she could do there than on this side.
Yeah.
So she really dropped the whole idea of bodily regeneration and moved to the idea that she could work from the other side as a spiritual force.
Yes.
And so her passing was amazing, because she wasn't ill, as far as we could tell. You know, no one knows exactly what happened when she died, except that she predicted it and told all of the people in Unity she was leaving, and then it happened.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, let's talk about Charles's relationships with women, because, you know, he had two remarkable relationships, didn't he? One with Myrtle, as you just mentioned, the love of his life and the mother of his three children. And then after Myrtle's passing, his relationship with Cora Dedrick was very interesting too, because she'd been at Unity for many years, right? She was a dedicated
secretary.
Unity person. And she was dedicated to, she was very devoted to Charles, it seems, you know, and wanted to systematize some of his writings and wrote herself. I love Christ Enthroned in Man. That's
right.
Talk about the 12 powers. I think that's probably the best book on the 12 powers.
It is probably the best book on the 12 powers.
And it was
exactly.
You know, mostly written by her.
Absolutely.
Very approachable book. But she that was a quite remarkable relationship, wasn't it, with Cora?
Well, you've got to remember that she knew Charles very well as his secretary for many years. And when Myrtle died, Charles was, he died at age 94, I think, and so that was, and he died in 47. He lived 16 years after Myrtle died. So he was in his 70s when, or maybe even early 80s, you know, he could have been late 70s when he and Cora got together, because they got together about 2 years after Myrtle died. Without Cora, he would never have written the 4 or 5 books that came that he did in his 80s and early 90s. I mean, she was really devoted to him, and he needed her. Because,
and they were some of the best writings too. You know, she helped.
That's true.
She helped him with his style, didn't she?
She did. Now, she was key and critical in the last years of his life. He would never have done what he did without her.
You have some amusing and disarming anecdotes too about their lives together. You know, she was a dedicated vegetarian, wasn't she, or even
I know,
vegan?
Yes.
I think. And the story about you know, Charles liked his Coke and his ice cream, and she liked her alfalfa tea, and she would try and dissuade him from drinking Coke, which he rarely agreed with, but sometimes went along with it. But so she kept him a little bit on the straight and narrow there, I guess.
She tried.
Yeah, she tried.
He would sneak to the refrigerator at night when she wasn't looking.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned also they probably didn't have a sexual relationship there, or a romance so much as she, you know, they had a master-disciple relationship almost, right? That she was
well,
totally
dedicated.
Well,
you could say that, but you've got to remember, too, that bodily regeneration was about controlling the sexual impulse.
Ah, yes.
And so you couldn't regenerate the body if you were spilling your sexual energies out in sexual intercourse. So,
right.
You know, that was good.
Well, no wonder bodily resurrection doesn't, regeneration doesn't happen anymore in Unity.
Of course not.
People enjoy their bodily pleasures too much.
It's one of his far-out teachings that has been kind of dropped, which is understandable.
Well, you know, it's also a yogic teaching because, you know, tantric yoga and sexuality talks about this too, you know, that maintaining your life force and not spilling the energies out, etc. So, you know, I think he was picking up on some of those teachings too.
He very probably
and,
was.
And, you know, they work to a degree. I think they have a relevance, but... you know, I think, you know, holism is important, too, that, you know, all parts of us can be sanctified, right? That each part of us is a beautiful aspect of being alive. And so we can celebrate all aspects of us and not have to deny things. Obviously, Charles didn't deny in his life. He had three wonderful children and, you know, a very full romantic relationship with Myrtle
early on, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So in the last chapter of the book, before we get to that, actually, you mentioned Warren Felt Evans, and we mentioned Ralph Waldo Emerson being a great influence, and people like Emma Curtis Hopkins. Mm-hmm. And because they say that, you know, Emanuel Swedenborg was one of the great harbingers of the new thought way of thinking too, right? I don't know how important Swedenborg was directly, but he obviously indirectly influenced Charles, right?
Well, he was and Swedenborg was very influential over Emerson. Emerson really adopted Swedenborg's ideas. So,
and then a lot of people say that, you know, Mary Baker Eddy, you know, had the sort of lockdown on Christian Science, and of course she eventually took the copyright. And the new thought sort of sprung out from Christian Science. Do you accept that hypothesis?
Oh, absolutely not. No. You see, here's the thing. The Fillmore's... Mary Baker Eddy was a theist. And she grew up in Congregationalism. And... her idea of healing was very different from what the Unity idea of healing. The Unity idea of healing comes from connecting with the inner power, the inner life.
Excuse
and
me,
in Christian Science, you are connecting with an outer, the God out there. It's a union with from you to that transcendent God. And she had no time for Emerson. She thought all of Emerson's ideas were simply incorrect about the idea of the divine within. So that the Fillmores read her, but they did not find her. Emma Curtis Hopkins had rejected a lot of her, even though she had been a student of Mary Baker Eddy, her Christian Science teaching was not that of Eddy. It was more out of Emerson. And so there is this mistake in parts of Unity that Unity is a part of Christian Science. It's not. And also about Quimby. They don't even know, the Fillmores don't know who Quimby is. till about 1895. And there's some beliefs in Unity that Quimby is really the founder, is one of the originators of the Unity teaching. He's not. So anyway.
Yeah, we're talking about Phineas Parkhurst Quimby, right? The
right.
Mental healer, whatever. The
right.
The truth is the cure and all that stuff from Maine originally.
Well, Eddie learned from him. Eddie was a teacher.
If you read books like Charles Brayton's book, you know, he talks a lot about the journey of from Mesmer through Quimby through other, you know, harbingers of new thoughts, you know, to Unity.
Right.
And it, you know, we've got to be careful, right, because there's not always the direct correlation that's suggested by some writers.
You see, really, Unity is the Unity teaching is not original with Charles and Myrtle. It is a teaching in which they have taken from other sources,
right,
and put them together into a teaching that is called the teaching of the Unity School of Christianity. And so, you have to be, you know, look at where the ideas come from. One of I'm spacing out on the other area that Charles looked at, comes out of, I was looking at it last night and I realized and recognizing it. It's from an occult teaching. I'll think of it in just a bit here. But anyway, it's the Unity teaching comes from a variety of differing sources that the Fillmores put together because both of them were really brilliant and both of them were very able to put together a coherent teaching that they framed under the rubric of the Unity School of Christianity. And I don't know how much you're aware of what's gone on since Connie Fillmore left Unity School, but they came up with this thing called Unity Brand. Are you aware of it?
Maybe. You have to tell me more.
Well, in presenting Unity, when Tom Zender was the president of Unity School, they felt that, and they brought in a guy by the name of Tim Ipema, who was supposedly involved in communications, and they felt that we shouldn't focus on the Unity School of Christianity because it makes us look like we are fundamentalists. So let's focus on Unity Brand. And Charlotte use the same thing. You don't see very few references to Unity School of Christianity since Connie left in the administrations of both Tom Zender and Charlotte Shelton. Now, I'm hoping we're going to get back to it. Phil Pearson is absolutely adamant that we get back to the Unity School of Christianity. He has been talking with Jim Blake in regard to that. So we shall see. But it's, to me, a major weakness in the current movement, the lack of focus on the Unity School of Christianity. Because that's what we are. You know, we're not
right.
Unity Brand. Unity Brand is an amalgamation, and it's a homogenization of the movement. It has good things in it, but it does not get back to our original teaching coming from Charles and Myrtle about Jesus and the interpretation of Christianity.
I think from, you know, my perspective coming into Unity in the 80s and being ordained in the late 80s, you know, when I came into Unity, I saw it as a part of the perennial philosophy, you know, and I think there's a lot of Unity teachers and ministers who would subscribe to that view, you know, that it's another expression or flowering of the golden thread of the perennial philosophy as you see in all religions, and so, you know, I think there's a little resistance then to going back to something that might be called Unity School of Christianity, because although it is based in Christianity and the teachings of Jesus, you know, embraces the perennial philosophy, the truth of the presence within, you know, that's in all mystical traditions. And I think that's the shift there, you know, to Unity World Headquarters as opposed to Unity School of Christianity.
Well, I take your point, but I think
for me at least, Unity is larger than Christianity.
Well, but you see, it's a form of Christianity. And that's such an important distinction to be made between traditional Christianity, which is based on the doctrine of the Trinity, and Unity, which is focused on the Christ consciousness and the Christ mind. And when you bring in the Christ, you're talking about Jesus, and you're talking about an interpretation of his work. And if you look at Unity Magazine, there's very little on it about Jesus today. I don't know if you get Unity Magazine or not, but there's very little that relates to the Jesus teaching in that magazine in the last 4, 5, 6, 7 years. And I think this is a big mistake, that we need to get back to Jesus as the principal way-shower and teacher and healer and the one who manifested the divine within, the Christ consciousness. At least that's where I'm coming from anyway.
Well, I think you have a valid point, and unity being unity, I think there's room for all kinds. You know, there's people that want to go back to pure Fillmorian teachings, and there's others that see, you know, that think that Fillmore would have unfolded his ideas over the years if he's still alive today, and that we should too. But you know, I'm comfortable with Jesus being at the center of my ministry. But I'm also comfortable with those who, you know, have a problem with Jesus and because of the baggage that comes from fundamentalism, you know, and we prefer not to talk about Jesus himself too much, you know.
You look at Eric Butterworth and the book that sold the most copies presenting the Unity teaching, Jesus is big in Butterworth.
Well, yeah, and Discover the Power is all about, you know, Unity's interpretation of the Jesus Christ teachings, and I love the book.
So, you know, if you look at what there's no other work that presents the Unity teaching as effectively as Butterworth's book has, Discovering the Power Within. It's still there, you know, it's still used. 1968, wonderful. It was a bestseller at one point in time.
And yeah, wonderful book.
So, you understand you're talking to someone who has a very strong point of view on this regard.
Yeah, that's fine. Let's come back to, because we're getting close to the end of the show, let's come back to Charles again. And okay. a wonderful quote from James Stillett Freeman, poet laureate of Unity.
Right.
He said about Charles, he says, he was gifted with uncommon sense, but he also had an uncommon lot of common sense, which sounds like the folksy writings of James Stillett Freeman right there. But it's a wonderful statement, isn't it?
It is.
He had a lot of uncommon sense because he was this great teacher and organizer, but he was also down to earth. I think that's the thing that stands out. He never wanted to lift himself up as a great teacher or master, did he? He was very self-effacing. He was always pointing to the truth within somebody else rather than how great he was. I think this is what made him so wonderful. And he was humorous and joyful, wasn't he? And your last
he had a great sense of humor and took himself lightly.
Things.
You know, he took himself lightly, and that's the thing that's very appealing about him. He doesn't come on as some great teacher, some great healer. You don't look to him as a guru of any kind. You know, he's very humble and self-effacing, and yet very serious and very committed. And you get a genuineness about him that is very appealing.
Yes, and I think that's a good way to end the show, actually, because in today's world where we are fraught with many difficulties and seeming problems, it's good to follow the example of Charles here. And and maintain that light touch, you know, and to embrace opposites and allow for different aspects of truth and aspects of this world as well, and see that that's an asset to the unity movement, you know, not to say one's right and the other's wrong, but to say we have a tradition that can be very Christ-centered without having Jesus, and yet for those who love Jesus, you can have Jesus and Krishna and Buddha and all the others. That this is what makes unity unique in that regard. So we're grateful for people like Neil Varley, and grateful for all the other explicators of the truth in this ongoing process. So, Neil, thank you so much for being on the show today and bringing your wisdom.
I enjoyed it. It was fun talking about
it. We just scratched the surface. You'll have to be back on and talk about another one of your books.
Okay. Well, I'm going to send you three of the ones that you don't have, so I'll get them in the mail.
Okay, cool. All right, I'll be back in touch then. And I hope this has been helpful for those who know about Unity or don't know about Unity, the little inner workings of the movement, but also maybe it'll inspire you to read some more of Neil's books or to find out more about Unity in general. Let me tell you about next week. Next week, Richard Anderson, coach, teacher, and author from Great Britain, is with me to talk about his upcoming book on spirituality. Richard's a lovely guy. I visited with him last year when I was in England, and I think you're going to enjoy his presence on our show next week. So join me then. And again, once again, thanks to Neil, and thanks for listening, folks. Bye-bye now.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Tens of thousands of listeners, like you, have been transformed through the ministry of Paulette Pipe and her program, Touching the Stillness, one of the longest-running programs on Unity Online Radio. Paulette's latest album of guided meditations, Blissful Stillness, is a new and different experience. The mystical quality of her beautiful voice will reverberate through a Zen-style meditation, a mudra meditation, which are yoga hand positions to deepen your practice, and guided meditations, which we know and love. It features a new instrumental sound by Kelly Hunt with a bonus track by Kathy Zavada. Experience a blissful immersion into quiet and stillness by purchasing your own copy at shop.unityonline.org.
Blissful stillness, calm.
Life calls upon us to be open to new ideas, new creative ways of thinking, and new ways of doing things. All of the positive changes in our world have been the result of open-minded people looking at some aspect of their world in a whole new way. You can have a more exciting life filled with wonder and glory when you keep an open mind about the new and unusual things that come your way, and when you take a new look at what you thought were life's ordinary experiences. Just like the turtle who won't get anywhere in life without sticking its neck out a little, We get a lot further in life by sticking our mental neck out a little every day. You can be open to the changes in your world by starting with your own thoughts. This message has been brought to you by the Association of Unity Churches International. To find a Unity Church near you, visit www.unity.org.
Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.